This week on Retronauts, Zero and a Half Shell. Hello, and welcome to this metallic episode of Retronauts. I am your host, Nadia Oxford, and I'd like to talk to you all about the fourth and last entry in the Mega Man Zero series. With me today to do this really cool, metallic, robotic, etc. task are my guests, who should all be familiar if you've listened to at least one episode where I've just kind of scrounged up other Mega Man experts. So let's go around the table. First, it's our own Stuart Gipp. Hi, Stuart. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, hello. Hello. It's Stuart Gipp, actually. I'm sorry, sir.
I'm so sorry.
No, this is the thing. My name spells that and is also stupid. It makes no sense. So it's fine. Like, I'm the one who's in the wrong for having the name. hello. Yes, I'm Stuart Gipp. I never cared about justice, and it's not for me to call myself a hero. That's for others to do if they choose. Thank you.
That's a good reference. I approve of that.
Thank you.
We have another long-lost lone hunter called Victor Hunter. Hey.
I'm hungry. E-crystals. Give me more.
No, absolutely not. Are you supposed to be the fat Reploid or some other...
I'm the cyber elf. I'm a little whiny baby. Okay. Feed me so I can grow up big and strong.
God, there's a lot of things to eat E-crystals in that game. Everyone's just begging me for something to eat. And finally...
I think that's why there's a crisis.
Yeah, well, there's my husband, David Oxford. Hi, David.
Hello.
Tell us more about this crisis.
Yeah, it's basically the kind of backbone of the whole series, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. And to the point that, like, in Mega Man Zero 2, they reference literally concentration camps that Reploids are put into. It's just like, those were two words I read in a Mega Man game. Anyway, we're talking about Mega Man Zero 4 today, not Mega Man Zero 2. I don't even know if I've done a Pantheon on Zero 2. I feel like I must have talked about it somewhere. But yeah, thank you all so much for joining me. I'm always thrilled to have y'all on with me when we talk about a Mega Man thing.
I think you did a general Mega Man Zero episode with Jeremy a few years ago, but
I was definitely on as well, but okay. I can't remember. They all blur together, all the Mega Man games and all of the series, all the same, smushed together.
Oh, they're all the same. We all know that.
As I'm sure you know.
Yeah, one thing you kind of grow up with when you grow up as a Mega Man fan is just everyone telling you, these games are all the same, and if you like them, you're stupid. I remember vividly, it was Game Informer. What was the sassy one, David? Was that Game Informer?
Game Players.
Game Players, yeah, saying Chris, what's his face, saying that, like,
Slate.
Chris Slate, saying that I used to call myself a Mega Man fan, now I just feel like Capcom sucker, and that was by Mega Man 7.
That early, good lord. Makes me think about erasing every UK magazine after, like, the PS1, just being like, this has got 2D graphics. EPU. Doing that exact voice for some reason.
Yeah, that the states were pretty similar in that regard most of the magazines. It was an awful time to be alive.
It really was.
Unlike 2026, which is off to a great start.
Everything's rosy.
Everything's coming up roses.
So happy I'm going to be in America in a couple of days.
Oh boy.
Hey, man, I'm risking it for the Proto-Men. I'll risk anything for the Proto-Men. Got to understand. Threatening to annex Canada? Who cares? I got to see the Proto-Men. Anyway, speaking of Proto-Men that aren't Proto-Men, Mega Man Zero 4 came out for the Game Boy Advance in 2005. And wowie zowie, like, when I was doing the research for this, I had forgotten how late it came out. That was a real late-ass Game Boy Advance game. That was 1 year after the DS release, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, this game still, it's at past the threshold where I still think of it as just having come out, which is really stupid, but unfortunately it is what it is.
Yeah.
Mega Man used to be the series that would always be one of the ones to turn out the lights, like, on a console.
Right.
You had, like, after the Super NES, there were, like, three more Mega Man games. Super NES, I guess the timing kind of worked out more or less.
Well, Mega Man and Base was a pretty late release.
Yeah, those were, like, I think, 95.
In Japan.
Yeah. Legends 2, that came out, like, the day before the PlayStation 2. Oh, yeah. Gee, we can't make more Mega Man Legends because Legends 2 didn't sell. I wonder why.
I actually bought Legends 2 because it was in it was sitting in an EB Games. And you know the EB Games, actually, David. It's the one in Yorkdale, same one. And some guy came in from a store. Like, I was working as a janitor at this mall at this time. And there was a guy who worked at the store. I think it was the Champs, which is a sports store. And I knew this guy because he used to drag the garbage from his store across the mall, which would leave a goddamn trail of coffee. And I'd follow it back to that store. And I'd say, your stupid coffee trail led me here. Stop doing that. It's not me. Well, anyway, he came into the EB Games and I was there. And he said to his girlfriend, I'm going to buy this game after work. And I was already planning to buy for Legends 2, but then I decided right then and there, oh, you know what? You're going to buy it? Well, no, you're not, because I'm going to buy it. Oop, don't dump out your coffee before you throw it out, asshole.
Are you sure it was Legends 2?
Yes.
You bought Legends 2 out of spite?
Yeah, basically. What do you mean what happened to it? I have Legends 2.
We only have one copy.
No, we don't. Listeners, this my dear husband and I have been married for 25 years. We've combined our game collection sets. That was our dowry, I suppose. So I swear to God, I have to. We got to have to. We'll discuss this later. This is a marital issue, anyway.
It's kind of the paradox of Mega Man is that it's so iterative, so that by the end of a console generation, in context, people are tired of it. But yes, outside of context, if you just take these games in a vacuum, there's these incredible games that a team has spent, you know, half a decade with the hardware, sometimes closer to a decade with the hardware. And yeah, invariably, they start getting really good at certain things. So it's such a bummer that the later Mega Mans of any generation are always kind of hand-waved away as like, oh yeah, I guess that one came out too. When in reality, yeah, they're usually pretty good.
Yeah, I think the back half of the NES ones are probably the better games overall.
I love them.
In all honesty, I mean, I love Mega Man 2 and Mega Man 3, don't get me wrong, but sure, those have some pretty rough edges on them.
Sure.
That the latter ones kind of lack.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I was actually surprised when I played Mega Man 4, and this came out in 92, as I recall. Of course, the SNES was way out by then. But 4 looked so good for the NES that I was just, wow, this got to be 16-bit as it is, which of course it's not. But Mega Man 5 also looked fantastic. But by then, magazines were saying, oh, it's another Mega Man game. And, you know, by then... Yeah. I know how the game critic brain works now, and you've moved on. You have to move on. You don't really have time to look back at the greats on the consoles that you kind of had to leave behind.
I will say, in fairness, most of the complaints I saw about the later NES games at the time were, but where is Super Mega Man already? Which, you know, fair. We'd already seen like Mario, Zelda, Contra, Castlevania by that point. So it's like, okay, I get it, but.
Even in our recent Pantheon of the Blood God episode, check out patreon.com/bloodgodpod.
Hell yeah.
Where we're talking about Mega Man Battle Network and like 6. People forget that 6 is just an incredibly good video game.
That's right. Yeah, that's we're actually thinking about just going back and playing 6 at some point because... Yeah. 2 is great, but 6 is that chance they got to refine the formula and gave us a really good game for it. And the same with, frankly, 04 is my favorite of the Zero series. I think it's the most fun to play. I think, and this is something I want to cover as much as I can here, I think it is by far the most interesting Mega Man game story-wise. I think it has like a lot of story content between that explores the relationship between Reploids and humans. And that is just not a subject that gets explored very deeply in any Mega Man game, even though it's supposed to be kind of at the forefront of this conflict, you know, humans versus robots. We see the robots all the time, but don't really see humans that often unless you're getting squished, and not even then.
Yeah.
That's usually a fake out.
That's one of the things that drove me most crazy when we finally got a Mega Man RPG, and I don't mean the Battle Network ones. I mean Mega Man X Command Mission.
Right.
And they like literally... This was the perfect opportunity to show the whole, you know, human side of things. And no, they went out of their way to get the humans out of there so that once again, nothing but robots. So,
yeah,
Zero Four was a bit of a pioneer there.
We have Dr. Kane, who might be alive. We have Schrodinger's Kane going on because no one really knows if he's alive or dead.
He's definitely dead by command mission.
Oh, he must have withered away. He must be dust by then. But I'm just thinking, well, they retconned it, so Kane might have gotten nuked. I don't know. But anyway, yeah. What is you all's experience with Mega Man Zero 4 in particular? I feel like maybe I reviewed it for someone. If I did not, I at the very least played it. As I said, I really enjoyed it. I don't have any special kind of memory or anything like that behind it. So what about you, Victor?
This is the height of my Mega Man fandom.
All right.
Game Boy Advance era. I was playing the Battle Networks. I was playing the Zeros. I was also working at EB Games at the time. So I'm pretty sure I picked this one up from the used pile with like complete box and instructions for like $10 or whatever.
Nice.
I played the crap out of all these games. I think 3 is the one that I got the best at because it demands a little more from you and is more interested in getting good at stages and perfecting your score and doing all that stuff. 4 is a little more lenient. It gives you a lot more room for error, and I don't find that its rewards for getting good are as interesting. But I'm sure we'll talk about that later. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've played these all a dozen times.
How about you, Stuart?
This is slightly a repeat because I would have mentioned this in previous Mega Man Zero episodes, but I didn't have a Game Boy Advance. But naughtily, these games were coming out on ROM sites very, very early, immediately.
They were very
playable. I remember things like Mario, like the launch GBA games before they even launched over here were being played on Visual Boy Advance. So I played all of the Rockman Zero, then Mega Man Zero in order. Like I went Japanese, then English, which is quite difficult in some of the early ones, oddly enough, although they weren't the RPGs. So Mega Man Zero 3 was huge for me. Like I love that game. It's still one of my favorite Mega Man games. It did actually feel very final, I thought. When you destroy the original body and it's like, well, this is where we're going now. Sorry for the spoilers, by the way, for all those who don't know that. Mm-hmm. And then Zero 4 would have been around, I swear I'm going somewhere with this, would have been around the same time as Sonic Advance 3-ish. Mm-hmm. And Sonic Advance 3 is a game that came out and was so weird that I thought it was fake. And then Mega Man Zero 4, because I didn't know how this worked, really. Mega Man Zero 4, Rockman Zero 4, drops, and I remember playing it and getting these vibes of like, this is really weird. This is not like the other games in the series. This is kind of a lot brighter, and the art looks a bit different because I'm pretty sure they changed sort of the series artist for this one, or at least in part. And everything's just odd. Like the Zero Knuckle is odd. The boss is odd. There's like a chicken, and there's
he's a cockatrice.
Yes, I know that now. You see, but even like the fact that when you first meet them, you see all of them standing there at once.
Yeah,
and you're just just jump him now. you got this.
Yeah. Like, stomp him.
Luna Edge and Minor Magnus can probably do this themselves. Just like drop him. But the whole thing has this vibe of just kind of like, it's the last day of school. we're going to have, everyone just bring in your fun ideas and we're just going to do all of them. And it comes together, I think, in a really strange and odd game. But it is one I've played lots and lots and lots of times, especially because it's the only, again, sorry for the spoilers, it's the only Mega Man series that really definitively has an actual conclusion, which at the time, I won't say that it hit me hard, but it did hit me. It's like, oh, and I'm sitting there for years like, well, I'm sure that's not really the end. Like ZX comes along and you're like, oh, it was. Oh, that's a shame.
That's once they put the J-pop song in there, that's the end of that. But yeah, that's actually a very nice ending. We'll get to that, I'm sure.
It is. But that's my experience with it is it's great, but it is kind of odd. It's weird. It's a weird game, I think.
David, do you have anything to say? Because I can't remember what our story was with 04, if I'm being honest with you. Beyond, I might have reviewed it for someone.
Strangely, it's probably the one of the series I've played the least. I don't think I've even actually finished it. I think that owes a lot to you playing it so much. But like 03, like I played repeated, like I mastered that game. Like I would be trash at it if I picked it up right now. I'm going to have to, it's going to be an interesting stream when we get there on Mega Man Mayhem. But at the time, I mean, I like S-ranked everything. Like, you know, I was just repeating it and I just could not stop with that game. 04 never quite grabbed me the same way, but it was still a pretty neat finale for the series, which wasn't even supposed to be the finale for the series, but
yeah, like it's kind of strange how like, okay, X5 was supposed to be the end. Oh no, it wasn't. 03 really did feel like the end. In fact, I was reading on either fandom or Wikipedia how it speculated that they definitively killed off Zero so Intercreates could just stop doing Mega Man Zero games already.
I'm not sure that's speculation. I think they said it in an interview.
Oh, okay.
The same way that after 03, they wanted to do something set in that 1 year span between 01 and 02.
And Capcom's like,
no, we want you to do something after 03. And I think the speculation is that they, like the reason 04 is kind of weird is like they were kind of salvaging ideas from that, like not having the resistance base and.
Because they're riding a caravan in this game and following a caravan of humans who have fled Neo Arcadia. It is an interesting game story-wise, and I'm glad that, you know, even though the game is kind of a bastard that shouldn't exist, that they gave it a decent story.
The 1.5 idea, as it were, it would get revisited pretty recently by Udon Comics or Udon Entertainment with the Mega Man Zero Timelines Number One comic by Ian Flynn, who wrote the Archie Mega Man series. So that's been a pretty popular point.
Good to know. Good to know.
Yeah, that's out now, right?
Yeah, that one's out. The ones that are not out are ZX and Legends, which come out this Wednesday.
Which is by you.
Legends, yeah.
Plug.
Wow. Yeah,
cool stuff. Anyway, this game. Oh, go ahead.
I just wanted to say, Stuart brought up the, brought up the part where, like, you know, you actually can see all the bosses together, which I don't think that has ever been done before. I don't remember if the ZX games ever did it. I only remember one other time, like, anything like that was done, and that was Mega Man 11, like, at the start where Wily's conveniently kidnapping them all in one spot. But yeah, that was such a, they had such an easy win right there. And honestly, if they weren't spending so much time talking about it, Minnow Magnus, his slow cadence notwithstanding, if they hadn't spent so much time like squabbling about it and Kraft being like, no, we don't have time to do that, they could have killed him already.
Yeah, Kraft alone is not exactly a pushover to him.
It's interesting that I do totally understand where you're coming from, Stuart, that it feels like a bit of a weird one. But replaying it, it is also kind of like it's a bit of a regression to the Mega Man mean as well. Like when I think of I always forget how weird 01 is, you know, it's got these connected zones and it's got this mission structure and it's got these, all these things where you return to areas and this big, like sprawling hub base thing. And it is a totally like, that is a weird experimental Mega Man. And I feel like as the series goes on, there are a lot of elements that sort of regress back to standard Mega Man fare, you know, like this is I think even three, are you able to pick all between all eight judges from the beginning, or is it a 4-4?
No, it's like 4-3-4, isn't it?
It's there's a weird structure to it. Totally.
Yeah, they bring back some of the bosses like around the middle or like at different points, but that you've got the, like, I think first four and then the second four.
Yeah. So this like 0-4 is straight up the only one that just has a traditional structure of here's 8 bosses, pick which one. But yeah,
I've forgotten about that. That this one actually does let you do any of them rather than staggering them like that. That is kind of weird. I guess I'm thinking along the lines of like, no hunter base, that's gone. You know, I mean, they were different in each game, but that's gone. All of the rest of the supporting cast, apart from like 2 guys, gone.
Love Hirondel, don't we?
Good old Hirondel. Andrew's not here, man. No stories from Andrew about his human life or his life with humans. I like Andrew a lot. I think he's a really interesting character.
Did 2 not let you pick all 8?
No, I think it was 4-4, wasn't it?
I think 2 is like, you do. Isn't there only like 6 in that, and then the rest are all the guardians or something? They're all weird. All these games are strange.
The count is weird.
Yeah.
No one can count to 8 in this series except for when it got to 4. Zero-4 was released in 2005. This was actually supposed to be a 20th anniversary episode, but it got kicked down the line. So a happy 21st anniversary to Mega Man 0-4. We love you. This is another game by Intercreates, of course. It's considerably less difficult than its predecessors, thanks to a weather system that lets you alter level effects. There's just a straight-up easy mode, too, isn't there?
In the original release, there is. I think it's gone in Legacy Collection, though.
I think it's still there, but it's effectively like kind of merged with the easy mode they made for the other 3 games. Rookie mode, I believe it's called.
And the DS one had easy scenario where you play through all 4 games in a row. Then the new one has rookie hunter mode. It's called that.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Directors. First, we have Ryota Ito. His Mobi games is empty after Gunvolt. Where did he go? Did you write that, Victor, or was that Stuart?
Oh, I did. I did write that,
He's on IMDb for having worked on Azure Striker Gunvolt 3, but it might be a different person. It's probably not, though.
probably him.
Weighted sort of, you know, the probability probably is him. It's probably the same guy. But,
well, one of the other Ryota Itos that Intercreates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someday I am going to just, like, get all the deets, every drop of tea about the split between Capcom and Inti. Like,
is it juicy? Is there a story there, or is it just kind of?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. I feel like Mighty No. 9 really soured things badly between them.
Well, they were already split off and doing their own thing by the time Mighty No. 9 rolled around.
Yeah,
but they were still doing things with, I feel like they were still doing things with Capcom until then, and then just all of a sudden, they just don't anymore.
Well, here's what I understand the situation to be, is Intercreates was founded by a bunch of former Capcom employees who worked on, I believe, the Mega Man X series.
Right.
And, of course, like, you know, I think, if I'm not mistaken, in Japan, something like, you know, leaving your company is kind of seen as a big no-no.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guess Inafune maintained ties with them and put them on the job of making Mega Man Zero and a few other odds and ends. Like, they also did Battleship Challenge for
Network.
Yeah.
And then it's when Inafune up and left the company, it's like Capcom's probably like, you know, well, screw you guys. We don't have to deal with you anymore.
Oh, good
point. I imagine over time, as people leave, they just have fewer ties with Capcom. Capcom's less interested in doing 2D side-scrolling action platformers anyway, so.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Except for Strider, Mega Man 11, Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection.
Sure.
Another director, Yoshinori Kawano, of the Dead Rising series director and the, I guess, the director for Resident Evil 4 Remake?
Separate Ways, the DLC, I believe he was the director of.
Well, that's fantastic.
Well, there's some context for what these people do now.
No, absolutely. I'm thinking, like, how do I link Dead Rising and Mega Man Zero in my head? It's a little difficult.
Well, I mean, there have been... Inafune did make Dead Rising, and there were plenty of Mega Man cameos throughout the series.
Yeah.
Oh, you could even actually be in a Zero mech in the fourth one, I think.
Sweet.
Or was it the fifth?
Yeah.
Whatever the Xbox One was.
Frank's big package. Say its name.
God damn it, Capcom.
Oh, cool. Hey, that's Vancouver's claim to fame is making those Dead Rising games. So.
Oh, was that a Vancouver joint?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think they made all the ones after 2 or 3 or something.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I think the studio got shut down, didn't it?
It did, yeah.
Yep.
Probably because they called it Frank's Big Package. Yeah, we want to make a new Dead Rising and we want to name it after his dork. Is that okay with you? Like, what? Sorry, we weren't listening. Oh, it's out.
What is with the Dead Rising naming? Why is the remaster called Dur-Dur?
Dur-Dur.
It's the deluxe remaster. They had a regular remaster, and then they went, hey, deluxe remaster.
But they...
Dead Rising finally got its doctorate.
Doctor, yeah, okay. Doctor Dead Rising.
Doctor Dead Rising. My foot hurts, help. let's move on and talk about the artists for the games. Victor. You love yourself some Intercreates art. Why don't you talk a little bit about the artists for 04?
Boy. Okay. So like Stuart was saying, there is a shift in who does a lot of the main illustrations as of 04. Now, Toru Nakayama is sort of known as the guy who established the Zero series style. It's chunky, it's geometric but still smooth, and I've talked about this regarding Boktai, but I think there is no other series I think that has such an art style that is so bespoke to the Game Boy Advance that translates so well into pixel art.
Oh yeah, completely agree.
I think these games are absolutely gorgeous, and Nakayama's style is to blame for that. I don't know if this is the first time that Capcom hired a porn artist to be their main illustrator.
I can say no.
But great.
It's certainly not the last time Inti did.
Yeah, it certainly wouldn't be the last. I think Nakayama's style is huge for this series and is just so perfect for the Game Boy Advance. Those hand-drawn backgrounds, I don't have the background. There were a couple background artists. Nakayama also did a lot of the background art, but there was a couple others as well. But transitioning into 04 and the... I keep wanting to call them Mavericks. No, they're fighting Mavericks. What are they called?
I know. I call them Mavericks because, come on, they're Mavericks.
I know. It's brutal.
They're ideals.
We're the Mavericks.
Yes, we are the Mavericks. Because Maverick is just a political designation to determine who you as a people should.
They started exploring that in Mega Man X4 and just dropped it. They just stopped caring.
It's purely a tool for fascism.
Yeah.
But Hirokazu Maeda, who did also work on the previous games, does the main illustrations for 04. So the Einherjar have really bold colors and a more high contrast color palette than a lot of the previous games. I know we talked about Mino Magnus, and he's just got these like the bright yellows and these bright purples. It's a really different look from the previous games. It does kind of set it apart, and like you say, Stu, also kind of makes it feel like a ROM hack, like a fan. when you see those Fire Emblem ROM hacks or the Pokemon ROM hacks where people make their own characters, and you're like, this, yeah, I get it. You're going for this style, and it looks a little weird.
I'm probably going to get this wrong because I know we'll mention the character, but I always call them Nej because of the word beige. Okay. I don't know if it's meant to be like.
It's Nej. No.
Yeah.
I'm going to call them
Français. Nej.
And Nej, right. Because when you first meet her in the game and you see her sprite, it's just more defined. It has more of an outline and darker than Seal or Zero Seal. Standing. I'm always going to call them what I called them when I'm a Seal Corp. Sorry.
Yeah,
I'm never going to get it right. That's why it's still Ryu.
The thing is, I think Capcom calls them that too. They'll use French names, but not the pronunciations as far as I know.
I'm just going to get it wrong forever, and everyone can keep calling me Stuart Gipp, and then we'll be square.
Okay? I've been Nadia a lot recently. I looked at like my official, like I have a Simon & Schuster page for some books I've done for Inside Editions, and it's like, Nadia. Like, oh, okay, cool. Huh. Nice to meet y'all. Sorry, Victor. Go on. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, I think that was it. I think that was just the natural flow of a conversation.
I think you're right. Yeah. And I see where you're coming from, but... Oh, go ahead, David.
Oh, I just wanted to say one thing I did like about the Zero series is the evolution of the art over the course of it. Like, the Zero One art is neat, but it was also like a lot kind of grainier and sketchier than I was used to from Mega Man. And it just like felt gradually like more and more polished, like as the Zero series went on and onward into ZX.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know what you guys are talking about, kind of like the Fisher-Price colors. It almost reminds me of the days when developers were still working with the vanilla Game Boy Advance and were making their, like, just painting up your games like a $5 trollop to kind of help it stand out amongst the lightless screen of the Game Boy Advance. But I think given the mythological pantheon we're dealing with here, it kind of works for me.
Oh, I don't think it doesn't work at all. I think it looks great, and it does kind of set it apart from the rest of the series. I just think that, yeah, you really see the subtleties of Maeda's style over Nakayama's.
Right.
Yeah, I think it works great. It's just it contributes to me to that change, this sense of like, this is different. This is different.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
Yeah.
The Heat Genblum's green is not a color you ever see in any previous games. I know that's a weird pull, but like it's just, yeah, there's colors that are never in the rest of the series.
I don't know if the colors palettes and things are a holdover from when it was the going to be 0.1.5, if any of that was kept. But I think there is a certain thematic like appropriateness to it, because 0.4 really marks like kind of a turning point in this whole timeline. Everything had been so like grim and dark like up to this point. And now people are like, you know, kind of coming around to, oh, okay, maybe being Neo Arcadia is not such a good thing, and fleeing and rediscovering nature, and you know, you've got the path to the more brighter future of Mega Man ZX, and this is kind of like a midpoint between what Mega Man Zero was in 1-3 and that. So
that's a good point. Yeah,
the more optimistic, let's say, color palette feels like it could be a part of that.
And even the origin of the Einherjar as this like, well, where have they been? You know, like it does seem like they were written for a midquel, because especially with the judges in 3, Wiles numbers, those were supposed to be like, these are Wiles' right hand men. So no wonder they are sort of our final gauntlet. And then these assholes show up.
Well, I think they're soldiers of craft. They're not necessarily answering directly to Wile, although...
But they are Neo-Arcadian Reploids who have control over massive, like, ecological systems. Like, they're... Then where did they come from? if they're this strong, if they're this elite soldier unit, what were they doing before?
Go ahead, David.
I was going to say, to your point, I think the ones in Mega Man 04 meant to be more like soldiers of Neo Arcadia, whereas the WoW numbers were, I believe they were called the Eight Gentle Judges? They're part of the hierarchy, authority of Neo Arcadia and like passing judgment on like, you know, Reploids and that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, there's definitely a different dynamic between the two that, you know, yeah. I think kind of helps explain the disparity there.
Now, how do you guys feel about the soundtrack for this game? Because we have Ippo Yamada on the... I guess the main composer on this, who also did the music for Mega Man X2 and Mega Man 7, which Mega Man 7 has a great soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. Mega Man 7, Burst Man, Forever. It's a great tune. I have mixed feelings, to be honest, personally. I think the compositions are great. I like a lot of the tracks from this. I really, really like them. I love, like, both of Kraft's themes. I love Falling Down is amazing, obviously. But the whole thing, it has this kind of guitar tone that sounds a bit like a kind of going doo, 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 doo. and it's a lot of that. And I kind of feel like I might like this better if they used the same instrumentation as they did in like 3, maybe.
Yeah,
it's a shame because like the first when you the opening prologue stage when you land on the back of the truck, the convoy, it thumps in and you're like, oh my god, this is going to be amazing. And then the main like lick comes in and you're like, oh dear.
Oh, maybe not.
Yeah, we sort of talked about this in the Battle Network 2 episode, again, patreon.com/bloodgodpod, about how the Battle Network games really embrace the Game Boy, like the DMG OG sound chip that is still present in the Game Boy Advance. Mega Man Zero really tries to make use of samples. And some of these samples aren't great and I don't love. There's a reason they don't release the OST in its Game Boy Advance form for the Zero series. They always release arrange albums.
Yes.
That I think do a better job of capturing the sound they're going for. Does that make it extra tragic that the Zero Legacy Collection doesn't let you swap in the arrange soundtrack like the Star Force Legacy Collection is going to? Yes, that makes me really, really sad. Because I love Ippo Yamada, and I don't think he did any composition for Mega Man 7. He did sound design, but I think the composers are different people. But I like his work. I like his stuff at Inti Creates since. Especially there's some great stuff in the Gunvolt games. I can't hum an Ippo Yamada tune for you to save my life. But like, yeah, there's nothing from the Zero series or, you know, Speed Power Gun Bike. As much as I love Love and Destroy, which I think is the best Inti Creates video game, I couldn't tell you a tune of his, which is kind of a bummer.
You mentioned him doing sound design for X2, and it's a funny thing you mentioned that because, and I'm usually in the minority on this, but I always felt that after X1, the sound quality on the Super NES games, particularly in X2, I think it came rebounded a little bit in X3, but I always felt like, I don't know, something about the sound quality for the music just wasn't as good as X1. Like, it wasn't as rich or something.
I agree with you on that. It's interesting because as soon as X2 got mentioned, I thought that's another game where I think the choices of sound or what kind of spoils some of the compositions. It has this kind of almost yappy dog kind of love some of the tunes are great, but I just wish they were executed nicer, and that's kind of how I feel about some of this. But don't get me wrong, I really like a lot of 04 soundtrack. I feel like, yeah, I mean, I'd still rather listen to the originals than the arrangements most of the time, but that's Yeah, maybe not so much here.
Yeah, I think Holy Land, the theme of the hub, like the caravan base.
That's
in
yeah,
Kor,
I do love that theme.
Fantastic. I think probably the best like hub world tune. I think it's amazing. There's the samples in it are great and really suit the zone. Mega Man X2's composer was Yuki Iwai. Just for reference.
Did Yamada do Mega Man Zero 2?
Yes. I think he's been involved in all of them.
Because there's one song in that one that lives rent-free in my head, Power Bomb.
Which one was that?
That is like the, I believe, mid-stage thing where Neo Arcadia just decides, screw it, we're going to nuke the resistance base. Zero has to go on the air fleet and set things up
cool.
So it can disarm it.
Ooh,
every version of that rocks.
Masaki Suzuki, Luna Umegaki, Tsutomu Kurihara were composers for Zero 2. Ippo Yamada, not even listed.
There's a lot of composers on these games.
There's tons! Yeah.
Is there any specific reason? It's just Intercreates, I guess, values music that much?
If I had to guess, I would say it might just be a progression of the technology. Like, you know, you probably have one person back on the NES because you could only do so much, like, you know, for chiptunes there. But as, like, you know, the technology allows you to do more, it takes more time to create, like, you know, these, like, you know, fuller compositions. And they probably need more people, especially when they're coming out, like, nearly annually or sooner.
Good point. Yeah.
I think there's probably something to do with the quick turnaround on.
Yeah,
these, I would
say. Too many cooks, but that makes sense. So going on to the story for this game, did you add the scenario right here, Victor? Makoto Yabe?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did the scenario for ZX and Advent, didn't they? So kind of writing into their new scenario.
Totally.
Yeah. Handy.
Right. So as we kind of mentioned earlier, this game is disconnected another way, stories-wise, as it really deals with themes of nature and the natural world versus the metallic kind of sterile world of Neo Arcadia. We get actually some good insight into what life is like in Neo Arcadia a little bit in this game. But when we start, Zero Shill and some Mobile Resistance members are saving a caravan of humans who fled the former paradise, Neo Arcadia. It turns out Dr. Wheel, is it Wile or Wheel or Wheel?
It's Wairu.
Wairu is such an awkward name.
Bairu.
I usually go Wile because in Japan he was Dr. Vile, but we already had Vile, so they had to change it here and get people emailed when they start talking about his evil deeds.
Yeah. Can we talk about how in Japan the character we know as Vile is called Vava.
Yes.
So Dr. Wile is called Dr. Vile in Japan, but he's called Dr. Wile here, which is confusing because he does look like a Zero interpretation of a Dr. Wily.
He does.
So you have two different character confusions depending on which region you're in. It's a mess. What a mess.
It's also, there was a Dr. Andrew Wile who...
Oh, did he die?
He might still be alive. I don't freaking know. But he wrote to, was it the Mega Man Network, saying, stop calling me an evil scientist, because you wrote like an article for Mega Man Network saying, oh, the evil scientist, Dr. Wild, is in Mega Man 04, blah, blah, blah. And this dumbass is like, excuse me, I'm not an evil scientist. Stop calling me that.
He just has a Google alert for his name.
Something like that, yeah. If I remember correctly, I think it was after the Zero series had ended, too.
Wow.
Either way, that was a weird day when we were trying to figure out what the hell was going on. And we're like, oh, okay, he's being a boomer. I get it.
You might hear this podcast and get pissed off with you again.
Yeah.
Listen, this time exercise your observational skills like a human adult and you'll be okay.
Put that doctorate to good use.
Took exactly. Come on. Did you print that out on a laser printer or what's your story? So Mega Man Zero 4, an interesting point is that there were consequences held over from Mega Man Zero 3 when, even though X was the head of state and he wasn't exactly legit because he was a copy, he was dispatched. And that made Dr. Wheel kind of invoke, like, oops, I guess the terrorists are going to do terrorist things, and I guess we got to do martial law now. And so Neo Arcadia apparently sucks now. It was originally intended to be a paradise for humanity to live in safety from Reploid Mavericks. Mm. But now it just all blows, and that's why the humans are trying to flee in this caravan. But Wheel's chasing them because he doesn't really want anyone to exist outside of his control, human or Reploid. And that's kind of where you come in as Zero. You save the caravan. You meet Nej, the reporter, who's a human. And you find out there's this human settlement that they're going to. And this is where things get interesting because they have a link back to Mega Man X5 when the Eurasia colony crashed. And apparently there was some kind of nature system in there. I imagine there was probably some biospheres or whatever. And it's spilling out into the wastelands of Mega Man Zero 4, because by this point the world is mostly a wasteland. New Arcadia is one of the only safe places for humans to exist. I think it's suggested that some of the wars that they went through, which are referenced in this game, really just nukes the crap out of the surface of the earth.
The elf wars that like kind of preceded the thing wiped out like a good chunk of humanity and an even greater chunk of Reploids. So, yeah, I can imagine that really doing a number on the environment.
I think the numbers were something like 60% of humans and like 90% of Reploids. It was just wild.
Yeah, thereabouts.
Yeah, so these refugees are trying to set up a new life in Area Zero. They don't like Zero because they don't like Reploids because they're humans. They don't really have a good reason to like Reploids at this point. So I'm glad they kind of finally addressed that. Victor, you look like you want to say something.
I love this.
Me too.
I love a colony drop. I think it is maybe my favorite thing a sci-fi villain can do is drop a space. Like, it's truly, I cannot think of a more horrific thing, and it rules. I mean, we're talking Char's Counterattack. We're talking Sonic Adventure 2. Anytime you're going to tell me you want to drop a colony, I'm here for it, which is why X5 rules. And the fact that X5 is also dictated by RNG so heavily, like you are there's this timeline to it. And you have a ticking clock that is a game mechanic, and you are assembling parts to stop this colony from falling. And there is a chance that when you build your cannon properly, you shoot it and it blows up and it's fine. There's also a not insignificant chance that you'll only destroy a chunk of it, and then depending on RNG, the rest of the game is going to play out a little differently. So the fact that then with X6 and on, they sort of had to canonize the events of X5.
Right.
And decide, okay, it is canon that at least part of the colony Eurasia did fall and hit the Earth and devastate the region. The only thing that could make me love Zero 4 more is if they had canonized a different X5 ending. I would have loved what that would have done to Mega Man fandom for years to come. But I think this is a great setup. I love that it's just using a set piece from a previous X game to set this all up.
I love wonderful. That.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, incidentally, I remember the first time I played Mega Man X5, which actually I believe came out later than Legends 2 when we were talking about like Mega Man being the one to close the door that next six. Like, we're just really at the end of the PlayStation 1 era after the PlayStation 2. Mm. But back to my point. Yeah, the first time I played it, I remember the first thing I did basically was after saving my game, of course, was I wonder what happens if I just fire the laser immediately. And it destroyed the colony right off the bat, and like end game was open. And I'm like, oh my God, it's impossible to fail. I would learn otherwise later, but it was a little while. Like, I was just thinking like, oh, well, there's no fail state here.
Yeah, it's that game is a speedrunner's nightmare, but it's a real beauty to behold. What a bold choice. God, I wish anyone would do anything that cool anymore.
There was a real boner for dropping shit on shit in the 90s. There was Deep Impact. There was Armageddon. Mega Man X5.
Meteors are different. Meteors don't count.
Yeah, but the meteors got everyone horny for just throwing shit into the earth. Like I said, Mega Man X5 literally has an unused song called Armageddon. And when you listen to it, it's goddamn Aerosmith. It just is. It was just everyone just had this, I guess, idea that eventually something was going to slam into us. And that's funny because everyone kind of gets this paranoia at the same time. Like, oh, suddenly it's super volcanoes. Oh, suddenly it's sharks and tornadoes. And just for some reason, everyone just started obsessing about comets and other things. Comets and colonies.
They're not colonies, though. You got to. No. It's Char's Counterattack, man. It's one of the best movies of all time.
I need to watch that then.
Now I'm just imagining in Mega Man Legends, if like, you know, instead of firing a laser, swarms of Reaver bots or whatever, if like Eden just like, you know, after pausing like above the island, if it just starts slamming down into the island repeatedly, leaving these like holes along the coastline where it's like, you know, kind of looks like something round went there instead of just like, you know, firing at it.
That would take care of some of the population at least. Anyway, Zero then meets Kraft, a.k.a. Croft Dinner, a.k.a. Kraft with a C in the English translation because they didn't want to get too close to Croft Dinner, Kraft.
He's the cheesiest.
So as we said, Kraft is surrounded by his homies, the, how do you pronounce it, Enyar? Enyar?
Einherjar?
Einherjar. Einherjar.
It's Norse. I should know this. I'm Icelandic.
I'm not. I'm way too squat to be Icelandic. But as we said before, these Enyar and hey and whatever have
Neo-Arcadians.
These Neo-Arcadians, thank you, have a mythological theming to their designs this time around. We have, first of all, Fenri Luna Edge. Victor added here, fun use of the Zero Knuckle, stealing a card key from an enemy and using it to open a door to a sub-tank. That's really cool. I figure
as we address these all, we can talk a little bit about their stages, because there are some really good gimmicks in this game. But I think that throughout Zero, like, I think what sets the Reploids in the Zero series apart from things like your Duff McWhalens or whatever is
Duff McWhalen forever,
is that they are not just based on animals. They are all based off of mythological animals or folklore or whatever.
Like Fenrir is Fenrir.
Yeah, even going back to 01, you know, you have this theme throughout.
There's actually, canonically, that was Neo-Arcadia's decision to make humans more comfortable with staying in the in Neo-Arcadia, set addressing different religions and cultures and whatnot.
And that they...
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Yeah, that they are also protectors, so they are meant to be they're meant to evoke divinity. You're like Hanuman in 01.
Hanuman, Ganesh.
But how did I not piece that together? Jeez.
Yeah, it's good. It's a nice little touch. It's again something that just sets it apart from the X series, gives it its own flavor. Fenri Luna Edge's stage. When do we want to talk about weather?
Sorry, before you go into that, though, it's like, okay, in like manga and certain things, X has been like a Jesus analog.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And now I'm just imagining, like, you know, that this whole Neo-Arcadian thing is basically just like the Avengers of religions with like X, like, you know, being the, yeah. The Captain America, I guess.
Well, X, even like Ghost X, he's got his robe.
Cross.
He's yeah. got his halo. Like he's his truly. Stock. Yeah, absolutely.
He's absolute Jesus, especially in the Mega Man X manga. Sorry, Rockman X manga by Iwamoto. Literally, the one story that became kind of a breakout meme with the bit screaming Merry Christmas as X, who is crucified, is like. He thinks he's killed, but no, he's resurrected because he's X. And it says clearly, blatantly in the manga that, like, we celebrate X way we celebrate Jesus Christ on the birth of, you know, just it's quite literal. But yeah.
Oh, that's why it's called Xmas.
There you go. X died for your sins.
Oh,
heathens.
Put the X back in Xmas.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Stop talking about this Christ guy. Who's he?
So I'm sorry I have to say this because it's in my head and it won't come out.
Yeah.
So when X died for our sins, they like hammer one of those one hit kill spikes into him and then he's dead.
He just explodes.
Yeah. And that was his blood showering us with salvation. I'm sorry. We just lost all Christians on this podcast. Let's go on. Let's talk more about Mavericks, especially Luna.
Jesus,
sorry.
Jesus was a maverick.
He kind of was.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
The OG.
Yeah.
Well, no, I guess actually, I don't know. I guess maybe Adam and Eve were, but I don't know. I'm not going
to. You said that, Stu, with a real youth pastor energy. Like, turn your chair around. Yeah. Turn your baseball cap back. Hey,
that's
kids.
Where I'm planning to pivot when this whole Retronauts thing doesn't work out. Yeah. Fenrir Luna Edge. Okay. I want to bring up, with regards to this level, the Zero Knuckle.
Yes.
So this is our new weapon for this game. The Zero series in general has a bit of an issue with introducing new weapons and then kind of not giving them much utility outside of a few special cases. That's very different if you're a speedrunner.
Yeah.
Because then these get used in wild ways. But the Zero Knuckle kind of replaces, what was it, the triple rod.
The chain? Was the chain in the...
There was the chain. There was the shield spinny Beyblade.
Oh, I thought the shield was still here. No?
No.
But there was the... I forget what they were called. They were like the Tonfa type deals. In,
Were those the
recoil
four?
Rod?
Three?
Yeah.
Recoil rod.
Three,
those are all gone. Those are all gone. It's Saber, Buster, and Zero Knuckle. Because what the Zero Knuckle does is on specific enemies, you can just grab them and you'll steal their weapon.
Yeah.
I freaking love that because it is just... Did you ever watch the Ruby Spears Mega Man cartoon back in the day?
Of course.
Now I got your power.
Exactly. It is finally that in like game form in the truest sense. Just like reach out, grab an enemy, and take their weapon. And I freaking love that. Not to mention giving Zero finally, you know, putting a little more Mega Man in the Mega Man Zero, as it were.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Put the Mega Man back in Mega Man Zero. You heard it here, folks.
Yeah, it's a really natural sort of... I mean, you do have the sort of the EX skills, which were basically about as close as you could get to that in the previous ones. Mm-hmm. Although they're here too as well, but, you know, we'll talk about that eventually.
Yeah, I think those are more like the kind of X Mega Man X Series Zero stuff where you'd like get the different like, attack moves. Yeah.
We also have Soul Titanian, who is Titania, the fairy queen, and also a butterfly. I think that's a really cool design. Mm-hmm. It mentions that there was a partner, like she controls a satellite, a weather satellite, and can make her levels. Is she the one who, she makes the levels really hot. And you have to shelter in place in certain like areas to lower your temperature, kind of like Cloud in Final Fantasy VII when you're climbing the cliff and you have to warm yourself up. A little bit of the reverse going on there.
Yeah, even during the boss fight, like half of the screen.
Oh, that's right,
80% of the screen is unusable, more or less.
And I think you can visit the level when the weather is rainy, and that makes things significantly easier. But I feel like there's also a mention of Oberon. Is it pronounced Oberon? How's it pronounced? Oberon?
Oberon, yeah.
I feel like there was a mention of Oberon in this game, but for the life of me, I can't remember where it was.
Well, it just mentions that she runs the artificial sun. She controls it with a counterpart, so that she has a partner that she does it with. And through context clues, we could assume that this Reploid would have been the Oberon to her Titania.
Which I think is also really interesting. It would have been nice to have confirmation one way or the other, because that's a really clever story design, story thing to do.
This is a good time to talk about weather, because this is like a stage where it is very, very clear what the weather effect is.
Yes. Go ahead. Sorry, David.
Yes. Sorry. Just before you get into detail on that, I just wanted to say that, like, you know, the what you were talking about there with that stage, it really reminds me of Wire Sponge in X2, except. Yeah. Because, like, sometimes, like, it would get brighter and look hotter, and, like, I think you'd have, like, the waves, or, like, it would, like, turn to rain or whatever. None of it, except I think the rain, I think, might have had some pushback, like, some wind or something. But, yeah, like, there was not a whole lot of effect or anything on it. Like, you know, you won't need to get to safety. But I do kind of wonder if maybe this idea wasn't, like, kind of a, you know, a carryover from that, and, like, you know, them reusing an old idea they didn't get to flesh out or something.
I have strong thoughts about the weather system, and maybe we'll get to them a little bit later, and what I think could have been implemented from older X games to make this more interesting, but I'll save that.
Did you want to talk about weather now? Because as you say, it is a major part of this stage.
Well, I do want to talk about, because Soul Titanian stage is, what you can do when you're selecting a stage is you can hit the change weather button, and it alternates between one of two states. And if you go in during a detrimental weather pattern, it means it's going to be a harder challenge. The weather will be on the boss's side. They'll have access to an EX move, and the game will just be a bit harder. But it's also the only way that you can acquire the boss's EX skill is by defeating them when the weather is to their advantage. Or, like Nadia was saying earlier, if you want the sort of diegetic easy mode, you switch to a weather that is beneficial to you, which in the case of Soul Titanian is the heat isn't as strong. So when you're standing in sunlight, your heat gauge rises slower and you don't have to take damage as often, because if you get to 100% heat, he'll take damage. So
the weather system is sort of taking the focus off the high ranking the game if you don't feel like you want to, I guess. Since you can now get the EX abilities just by clearing the stage on the more difficult mode, rather than doing so and keeping your ranking up, which is much harder to do.
Yeah, if you don't have anything to prove, then you can get through Mega Man Zero 4. Not that the boss patterns are that much easier, or that the stages aren't still, you know, difficult compared to plenty of other games.
Right.
But it is our little diegetic easy mode.
For sure. Yeah.
I wonder if it's like, okay, we're releasing this game after the Game Boy Advance successor came out. Maybe punishing the players relentlessly isn't such a good idea. Maybe we should throw them a bone. I wonder if that was a thought behind this.
Yeah, I wonder.
So our next Maverick, or Neo Arcadian, if you like, is the chicken, Popla Cockapetri. a cockatrice, and I love this little asshole. He's just like a little squabbling little. Ah, blah, blah. He's that little goblin character that always shows up in animes.
Yeah. I'm telling you, he's a chicken, robot a giant chicken.
I think Popla Cockapetri is maybe one of my favorite boss names. It's close to Childra Inarabita.
I love Childra Inarabita.
But this is what a great name. And yeah, he's such a little dingus.
I mean, Stuart was saying, well, I guess it's a chicken, but we actually did get just a straight up chicken in Mega Man X8 with Burn Cock.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is one of the, I guess, in a way, it makes me think of like how I didn't get to play the X4 5 until much later when the X Collection dropped. So all of those bosses seem weird to me as well, like Cyber Peacock, like really? A mushroom?
He's
well?
Cool.
Like, you know, he is cool. I know that now. But it helped lend to this game's sense of oddness that suddenly there is this, I don't know, it's just not that imposing. It's this little chicken fella who lays eggs at you. It's just not that imposing, really.
There's actually quite a few Mavericks and who cross over, in at least design-wise, in the Zero series and the X series. And it's interesting to see who does it better. And most of the time, frankly, I feel like IntCreates does it better. Like, Mega Man X8 had a Mantis Maverick. I don't even remember his name. There's a Dark Mantis or something like that.
Yeah.
But then in Zero 2, I think it was, he had Death Tense Mantis.
Zero 3, he's one of the judges. Yeah.
Such a cool design.
Oh, well,
like, he's amazing.
That looked like a thing that could take off your head after having sex with you.
Yeah.
Victor just logged on. Going on, we have...
That's female mantises.
That's true. Well, actually, one thing...
Killed as human, guys.
One thing I was actually going to bring up is we have a couple of female Mavericks in this game.
Yeah.
Titania, of course, is female. Noble Mandrago, who is our next Maverick, also female.
Yeah.
More Zero Knuckle fun. Plucking Mandrago out of the ground to combo her. I did not know you could do that.
Yes. Yeah. So I find... Zero Knuckle, I tend to not use it. I'm also a very, when I play a Zero game, I'm a Z Saber forward kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's just where I'm going to gravitate. So I unless I really want to play around and experiment, I don't find myself using other weapons that much. And especially because Zero Knuckle seems pretty situational and whatever. Yeah. But this fight, when she pops out of the ground, just Zero Knuckle her, pull her out like a little potato or whatever. Pull potatoes out of the ground, some kind of tuber. And then you can just mess her up. It's super fun. It's really smart and not something I think I figured out until like 10 years after it came out. But
that's great.
I'm really fond of how you use the Zero Knuckle in some of the boss fights. I mean, like right at the beginning when you just rip the wires out of the first boss, prologue boss. So all it can do is this one quite easy to avoid attack. I just think that's a really cool way of implementing that.
What?
Yeah, zoom right up to it, and there's like wires connecting it to the machinery. If you use the Zero Knuckle, I think 3 times, you just pull all the wires out, and then it can only do 1 attack. It's dope.
I take it back. I love the Zero Knuckle. Incredible. That rules. That's so fun.
Yeah, you were mentioning like your play style on the Saber and Buster and whatnot.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think normally in the other games, yeah, that's how I usually am. I think the part of the reason I never did quite finish this one is because I couldn't quit screwing around with the Zero Knuckle.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, to my detriment in a lot of cases, probably. But, yeah, I was just having too much fun.
Yeah. This is a good stage for it, too, because everything's plants. So
yeah. Rip it up.
You could try to, you know, do a combo on some of the flower enemies that pop up, or you can just rip them out by their roots and throw them. It's fun.
I love that. Just picturing this like plant boss. Stop that. Stop that. My children. Stop that.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to be annoyed that Capcom or IntCreates made a sequel to Super Mario Brothers 2 before Nintendo did?
I guess technically.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Moving on, talking about another crossover Maverick here, Pegasulta Eclair. Mm-hmm. Of course, is a Pegasus with war amps going on because it has like spark. it has. It didn't.
Explain yourself.
Go on.
I just made Victor's eyes grow like 10 sizes. Basically, if you're in Canada, there's an organization called War Amps, and it has this robot named Astar, and it's
a robot from Planet Danger.
And Astar kind of like plays in this really weird CGI world, and his arms are sawed off because, like, you know, he's in the planet. He's living in Planet Danger and fucking around on Planet Danger. Of course,
is Astar a he?
I thought Astar was a he.
I thought Astar was a woman.
What?
I thought Astar was a robot.
Oh, wow. Makes you think.
Either way, yeah, so both his arms came off. And the idea is that Astar reattaches his arm and says, I'm a robot from Planet Danger, and I can put my arm back on. You can't, so play safe. So Pegasulta Eclair has spikes where his arm should be, and it makes me wonder. Well, anyway.
I think he's just got big sword arms because it looks cool.
Oh, okay. It's swords. I never thought of that.
They're like lances. He's got lances on his forearms.
Right. It looks weird, is what I'm getting at.
Okay.
It looks like one of those. Okay, so maybe it doesn't have anything to do with Astar and the robot from Planet Danger. Maybe it's more like those fursuits people wear, where like they make the forearms really long, and the back legs are just like normal.
Fursuits where people make their forearms really long. Yeah.
And they're like portraying like a gibbon or something. Like a simian fursuit, you know.
Sure, either way, yeah. He's a very like proper, like, oh, I'm better than you, blah blah blah. I'm so noble and great, and I'm a Pegasus, and I do like Pegasi, so I can't say anything bad about this guy.
Yeah, I like him. His stage, his the design of his stage is odd. It's a lot of platforms that are like jagged and really interrupt your momentum. It's a strange one. I don't know if I like it. Also, if you go in with the detrimental weather, there's a storm going, so the wind is blowing you back and really messing with your jump trajectory.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like a pain in the ass, but it is interesting.
Yeah.
Can you pull anything from this Pegasus butt?
I don't know. Stu, can you? Is there anything to pull off of this pull guy?
You know what? I never tried. That's the one boss whose butt I didn't try to pull anything out of. It's unfortunate.
He's a bit fast.
He floats up in the air, and I find that Knuckle is pretty useless against him in general. So
yeah. We have Mino Magnus, who's a Minotaur. God damn it, I love me a Minotaur, especially a Minotaur with a big ass axe, which is actually a specific kind of axe from ancient Greece. I actually did not know that, called a labrys or something like that, labrys.
Mm-hmm.
He has a huge one. His axe is very big. He speaks very slowly to the point that other people will interrupt him to finish what he's trying to say. And Zero himself will tell him to shut up. And that's the only time where he will do that to another Maverick, except like with Frost Walrus from Zero, from X4. I always love it. Go ahead, dude.
I was just going to say, now I'm just imagining Zero just like sighing and rolling his eyes as he like, you know, gradually talks before telling him to shut up.
Can you grab this cow's meat? Can you grab meat from this cow?
I don't know.
Stuart, do you know if he can grab the cow?
I don't. I really don't know. You'd think, you know, udders, though, that would be a good, like, if they could have worked that in somehow, that would have been pretty good.
Sure, yeah.
Can you cheese this burger?
Yeah. Can you milk me, Greg?
Oh, no.
Says
rated M for
it's
your
a
mom.
Meet the Fockers reference. Come on.
What would be fun is if like you could like, you know, use the Z knuckle and just steal his axe and hit him with it.
That'd
just
be
like piss
that'd
him
cool.
off. Yeah. So he just like whacks you against the wall or something and takes it back.
that's the thing, is I feel like there's wasted potential with the Zero Knuckle in terms of getting some like boss weapons or something. You know, there's something cool there that they kind of missed out on. This stage drives me a little bit crazy because it's all about the magnetism affecting your jump height, either stifling it to the point where you just have to do like tiny, tiny wall jumps up the side of even a tiny little cliffside. And it's just kind of finicky.
Oh, I seem to remember hating that.
Yeah. And there's a bunch of orbs that are floating around, and you really have to understand the physics of it. Because as they get closer, they're magnetized to you more. So there's like this exponential thing where they move closer and closer, and I don't know. It's a lot to deal with on a tiny Game Boy Advance screen.
They could have done like a maze stage.
Sure. Yeah.
At least adhere to the Minotaur theme.
Yeah.
And then there is Tech Kraken, who was formerly in Phantom's Unit, which is a classic Storm Eagle / Storm Owl relationship that flavor that I love in these games, says Victor, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. This is my favorite thing. We talked about this in the X4 episode. When you've got a Maverick who is there to seek revenge on you for the last time you slaughtered a platoon of elite soldiers. Yeah, I love this one, especially because Phantom has a special place as just a guy who actually died. Even though we do kill all these guys, Phantom like decidedly blew himself up and is very, very dead.
To the point, actually, that there is artwork of what happens after Ragnarok blows up at the end of this game. And you see X along with the generals. And I think that Phantom is, I don't remember if he's transparent or he has some indication that he's dead. And the others are actually alive in their own weird way.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up later, but that was something they released, I believe, with the soundtrack after 04, but it's since been retconned, apparently.
Oh, has it?
Well, yeah. I mean, look at ZX. Like, you know, they aren't around then. So basically, I believe I can't remember if it was officially stated. I think it was, but I'm not 100% sure. But the idea being that the explosion of Omega basically took the other three out, and only Zero is saved.
Yeah, they're dead. Okay. The generals are dead. Yeah.
Oh, they're dead. Yeah.
Can I mention real briefly, I feel like it hasn't happened as much in the previous games. I feel like this game goes quite hard on the sort of non-standard boss arena. Because, I mean, even someone like Fenry Lunar Edge to me is one of the toughest in the series because, A, the room is so damn small, so big, and also you're on ice, right? Like, that's a rough boss fight. And then when you fight this guy, Tech Kraken, you've got a non-standard shape boss room. Yeah. You have the same issue with Pegasalt Eclair where there's death pits all around. It just seems like they kind of leaned into that a bit more in this game. When
the gimmick stuff, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of the time in the previous ones, it's just, here's your square room, here's your boss. I mean, not always entirely, but it's an interesting, another reason why this game feels kind of unusual, right? I'm just saying. Yeah. It's really stacking up.
Totally. And the fact that Tech Kraken, part of the fight is also the fact that he shoots things that then rebound off the walls. So the fact that you have an asymmetrical stage means that you are that much less likely to be able to predict what the pattern is going to be for these trajectories.
Not like, say, Armored Armadillo, where like when he bounces, it's a square room. You know exactly where he's going.
Yeah.
Before we move on, I want to bring up one other thing. Kind of actually a commonality here between two themes that Nadia and Victor were talking about. Tech Kraken would be another one of those X reprisals, because there was Volt Kraken, aka Squid Adler, in Mega Man X5, who had a connection, as I recall, to Octopardo, or Launch Octopus from X1. So
yeah, I love a robot cephalopod.
So you must love Mad Nautilus from Command Mission.
Yeah! Love him!
He does have a cool design, I have to admit. actually one that's overlooked when you talk about connections in between the Mavericks and characters in Mega Man X and Zero. In Mega Man X5, if you crash a colony or if you spread the Zero virus so everyone goes crazy, and you talk to Pegasus, Spyro Pegasus, you get the impression that he loved Iris and didn't tell her. And it's kind of talking to her while he's in his weird-ass state. So that's an interesting little bit, I think. A little chewy bit for you.
Yeah. I love... this is... You're totally giving away what you love the most about Zero Four by bringing up all of these instances where the flavor text implies a relationship between two characters.
Hell yeah. I am who I am, as the Sailor Man says.
This is very on brand.
What am I Zero Four?
The last Maverick is Heat Gemblem. Genbu, who is like a giant turtle, but also Genbu,
I think so.
Because that's the direction.
No,
I know
south is Suzaku. I don't remember.
They're Chinese deities, right? Like they command directions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You have the dragon, you have the turtle, you have the kitty cat or the tiger.
It's the north side, right? Protects the north or something.
I think so, yeah.
Yes, tortoise of the north, dragon of the east, phoenix of the south, tiger of the west.
Genbu is also, if you are an SMT fan, also a decent early game summon a lot of the time. I think he has Bufu, but anyway.
Oh.
He doesn't have Bufu here, which is an ice spell. He has fire here, which is a fire spell. Maybe one of my favorite hide from the laser at regular interval levels, says Victor.
Oh, yeah. Well, on the topic of Heat Gemblem, he's also follows the long tradition of turtle enemies who use Gamera moves.
Yes, spinny, spinny, spinny.
Yeah, I was going to make a friend to all the children joke, but...
yeah. We love it when a turtle tucks into his shell and spins around.
We do.
We love it. It's fun.
We support that.
This stage is fun because at the beginning of it, they say that so Heat Gemblem is running this big like particle laser.
Yeah.
That is raising the earth, because I don't know how much we talked about how Wile's plan is that he's going to destroy all of nature because he wants a monopoly on it so that no one can survive outside of Neo Arcadia. Imagine that, trying to control natural resources. So, sending your invading army out to raise the land. Interesting.
It could never happen.
So Heat Gemblem has this particle laser. At the beginning of the stage, they say, Zero, it's going to take some time for us to get the door open. And Zero says, whatever, I'm going to run through the barrel.
As he does.
So it is, of course, a dodge the laser that fires across the screen at regular intervals by ducking into nooks and crannies kind of stage. What I love about this level is that it is constantly screwing you over in fun, tiny little ways, because you will see that as you run through the main corridor, there are pits in the ground that you will want to jump into to avoid the laser. Eventually, you'll come across pits that have enemies in them. So you're like, okay, well, I got to get into there. So I'm going to, you know, kill this enemy, which is going to take a few more frames, but hopefully I can still get in there in time. Then eventually you'll run into enemies that pop up and that you can't really easily kill from above. So you'll jump into this little pit to hide. You'll realize you're standing on an enemy, and then it will pop up, and you'll get popped right up into the laser as it's going. That's just comedy. That's
funny. That's trolling.
Funny. But then the other thing it does is it uses enemy spawn patterns in a really sort of meta way, because if you spawn an enemy, you know, the enemies will spawn if they're a few feet off camera. So you'll spawn an enemy in the path of the laser, and it will get destroyed.
Yeah.
Implying that the laser is constantly just destroying its own spawning enemies as they are being created by the solipsistic zero that you are, that is able to spawn these enemies. It's like there's a weird epistemological thing going on here that is frightening. But there is a point where one of these rising enemies is in the main path of the laser. If you spawn it too early, it will get killed by the laser. If you hang back enough, you can run up to it, jump on it, and then jump off of it to get up to a secret that is hiding up in the ceiling. Then the laser will come and destroy that enemy. Then, as you keep moving to the right, you will discover that there was another better secret further to the right if you had just taken a leap of faith to the right off of that enemy. So right. Then you go back, and if you walk off screen enough, you can make that enemy respawn and you can try it again. But every time you're risking a one hit kill from this laser. So it's constantly taunting you with all of these little, little things that it teases, but dangles in front of you like a carrot on a stick, unless you want to risk getting hit by this laser over and over.
That's actually
really fun.
Extremely similar to a stage in Cave Story, the Egg Corridor, where you have that little hedgehog dude running the area, right. And you have to kind of take that risk to go down and get like the upgrades and stuff like that, which is one of my favorite levels in a video game. Just the music, the pacing, really great. Yeah.
I just think it's so fun that they use respawning enemies by running off screen as a mechanic.
That's pretty fun and clever. So anyway, turns out, getting back to the story, because once you defeat the Mavericks, like, of course, you go through the usual shenanigans where maybe I think it's the halfway point, like someone comes around and says, hey, you stop that. And they try to destroy the camp that the humans have set up because, again, we also want anyone doesn't want humans or Replodes out of New Arcadia. So things get complicated here because it turns out Nej was Kraft's squeeze at one point, which makes shit between them complicated, and it's Kraft who is following Wheels' orders to destroy Area Zero under quote-unquote Operation Ragnarok, which is supposed to be the decimation of anything natural on planet Earth. So he eventually kidnaps Nej so she'll be safe, and soon enough, Wyle reveals that, okay, I'm not even, like, destroying nature the slow way here. I just have a cannon called Ragnarok. That's where the name Operation Ragnarok actually means. I'm gonna just blow up everything from orbit is the only way to be sure. And Kraft, ever the nihilist, gets fed up with being led around by Wheel, goes full Joker, and nukes Neo Arcadia with Ragnarok. He basically turns the weapon on Wyle, who can regenerate, which is a pretty horrific story point. And boy, oh boy, it sure does fuck up Neo Arcadia. Millions live in that city, millions of humans and Reploids, and the body count is not insignificant. Thank you, Kraft. Very nice.
I do like, I can't remember if it's Hirondelle who says in one of the little codec conversations, he says, like, evacuation complete. Thanks for buying us time. I'm like, really? You got, matter of hours, you got millions of people out of a massive city?
I feel like somewhere else it was pointed out that there was a huge body count because that makes sense. Of course there would be.
Oh yeah.
Of course, some people evacuated, but not everyone.
I think others like were already like evacuating besides Nezha's group too, weren't they? Like before all this.
Yeah, but there's no way. Like they actually show you a cutscene of the destruction and things look pretty messed up. Like they're carrying people out who are like hurt pretty badly.
It's okay. We can see their parachutes.
Exactly. That's kind of what it reminds me of. And I'm just wondering.
Good thing it's a Sunday and everybody's at the game.
Is that the excuse they used in Britain? Everyone's in the game?
No, it was like Dragon Ball or something. Or so
Dragon Ball Z, yeah.
Yeah, they said I see their parachutes.
So it's amazing.
No, they said, good thing it was Sunday. Otherwise, those buildings are full of people.
That's it, yeah.
And Mandarin sound like Triple H there.
Yeah, really. And I'm just like imagining like just like the corpse, like, you know, incinerated corpse of like the parachute guy from Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, just the parachute deployed on the ground. It's okay. We can see their parachutes.
Interesting thing. Ragnarok was also the name of the cannon, satellite cannon in Final Fantasy VIII, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, Ragnarok is that's, again, more classic Norse mythology. That's when all the Einherjar and everyone have their big final climactic battle.
Yes.
Well, it's just like, I have a theme going here. I'm going to stick to it.
Yeah.
There is like other Norse themes though in the Zero series, of course, like the Tree of Life, Yggdrasil, of course, shows up.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's heavy in the Zero games.
So Wile merges with Ragnarok's core and tries slamming the satellite into Earth. And this is where Victor talks about his love for colony drops. And we've already kind of covered that a little bit. But yeah.
It's you're bookending a game with colony drops. I love it. It's great. You set up that one that happened long ago is the genesis of rebirth and humanity's second chance, and then you drop another one.
Yeah,
I'll take care of them. The major threat. I love it.
I think it's a really cool kind of swerve to go from optimistic kind of almost epilogue feel of the beginning of the game, and then no, nothing's okay. Nothing's ever going to be okay ever. Mm-hmm. It's just dope as hell. To be honest, this whole the whole finale of this game is dope as hell. I love it.
It really is. I actually really like the last battle. I like the fight with I should mention, actually, this is a little bit, we'll talk a little bit about the bridge between classic Mega Man and Mega Man X, which is the Elf Wars. David, you probably have a better memory of this than I do. How would you describe the Elf Wars?
Wow. Okay. So Dr. Wile, as I recall, he's working with Shell's ancestor on Zero's original body. They were trying to find a cure for the Maverick virus.
Right.
And ended up making, like, putting Zero, like, in another body, the one that he has now. And while he decided to make a new Reploid consciousness for the original body called Omega, who ended up becoming his general when they developed the Cyber Elves, which were apparently, I think, able to... Well, not the cyber elves themselves, but like the mother elf.
The mother elf, yeah.
To counter the Sigma virus, the Maverick virus, whatever you want to call it. And Wow decided to take that to the extreme. He made Omega his general, basically, and declared war and wiped out a whole bunch of humanity and a ton of even more Reploids, as pointed out earlier. Zero and I believe X, Axel, depending on where you look, like, you know, their combined efforts able to bring Wile and Omega down. They basically, and this is the crazy thing to me, but at the same time, it's definitely got, like, you know, presenting the Torment Nexus as seen in the book Do Not Create the Torment Nexus thing, where basically they're like, oh, we want to punish you bad, but we don't want you to die, so we're going to make it so you regenerate and basically live forever. And then they shoot him and Omega, like, because I don't think they were able to destroy Omega for some reason, just like shoot them into space, and they come back, like, you know, and
pissed off,
like, at the beginning of 03. Yeah, he's just like totally pissed because, like, you know, he's just been
that That is such a bad idea to be like.
It really is, and he's a real mean son of a bitch. Like,
we want to punish you, and to begin with, we're going to make you immortal. Like, whoops.
And then we're going to stick you on a satellite, and we're not going to give you any bad movies to watch.
Nice reference. Yeah.
Thank you.
But Wile is, he's just a real bitter, real angry villain. Sigma kind of had a motive. He wanted to destroy humanity. Wile, he wanted to be the best and be better than, you know, make something better than Rockman, be better than Dr. Light. Wile's just like, I was tormented over and over again in just this endless existence, and I was kind of an asshole to begin with. So you know what? Go to hell. You're all going to suffer with me. I don't care if Earth gets blown up. I can't die either way, and my existence is terrible no matter if I'm on Earth or floating in space.
It's kind of fucking metal, right? It's metal.
It kind of is.
Yeah. Like, I mean, yeah, he's bad. He sucks, but at the same time, kind of cool.
He sucks, but he's cool.
Cold of personality kind of thing going on here.
There's actually a scene at the end of the game where his little weird-ass dome cone thing breaks, and you can see his face for the first time, and it's actually horrific. Like, it's just this melted thing.
We could see his face before, but like, I think it might have been distorted a little bit.
It was a little bit distorted, as you say.
You didn't get the full tilt while, like, I mean, the end of, sorry to jump ahead slightly, but we are talking about him.
Fine.
When, especially in the, I believe the Japanese version is the only one that has this, because they, in the previous games, they have had the blood from the Mavericks or from the Reploids that you destroy. And when he is being sort of Tetsuo'd at the end into Ragnarok, it's pissing blood everywhere. He's like, it's so violent. And
I don't remember the pissing blood.
It's as every time one of those cables slams into him, blood pours out of it.
And
it's
just so cool.
Constantly happening. And the screen whites out, he appears, and the big phallus appears, and you're like, what the hell is going on right now?
I think there is something to playing these games in their Japanese versions to get the full effect of the blood spray. Because we haven't, I'm sure that's been brought up on a previous episode, but every anime enemy shoots just a spray of blood when you slash through them in these games in the Japanese versions, and it was taken out of the English
it's
ones.
It's kind of satisfying, to be honest, to that spray of blood has a really cool arc.
It's incredible.
It does add something, I think. And you know, undubs, as they call them, ROMs are available, but obviously don't download them, for Christ's sake. You're not allowed, but they're out there and easy to find.
I know it didn't sell very well compared to the other collections, but the Mega Man Zero ZX Legacy Collection, most of the Legacy Collections have like let you play the English or Japanese versions, so that might be possible there. I'm not
sure.
It is
100%.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
It's actually a good collection if you haven't bought it.
Yeah.
Do that. Do so.
It's incredible.
Sure, it goes on sale often enough.
Do they retain sorry, this is a slight tangent, but I know when they re-released them on the DS, they edited some of the scripts to remove like the words kill or die, and I don't know if they retained that across the
Did they do that?
It's like instead of saying kill me Zero, I know Harpoio says finish me or something like that.
Oh, boo.
Yeah,
and finish me has other implications, smartasses. You think
and that's when the Zero knuckle comes to play. There we go. I almost made
it. There you go, it's
episode.
Useful after all.
Yeah. Almost made it through the whole episode without making a joke about him using it to jerk off, but here we are.
I'm disappointed it took this long.
It was inevitable.
I feel like we've touched on this already, but yeah, man, I'm glad there aren't any world leaders who would probably, like, you know, fuse with the satellite and just try to drop down and kill humanity because people didn't want to live under his rule.
A rain of blood, no less. Speaking of the final battle and whatnot, shoot, I had a thought and it completely escaped my stupid little head.
Was the thought that it's rad?
It is pretty goddamn rad.
It's cool.
Can
it's
I mention
really
in the
cool.
meantime about Kraft? Because we didn't really mention him at
yes,
all.
Yes, let's talk about Kraft. I like Kraft. I actually was a... I'm so
I like
hopeless.
The spirals.
Very good. I actually asked like a friend of mine to make a fan art of Kraft and Nej because there was nothing out there and there still is nothing out there except for that one piece of fan art, which is like a billion years old and still exists. And God bless. And this artist friend of mine, by the way, someone I've known since I was like 15 and she was even younger. She's an artist who goes to a lot of cons. And if you've seen like Chibi Deadpool, she was the one who started Chibi Deadpool. Like, and what kills me is that the guy who, Luigi, who shot that, the CEO, there's a...
Allegedly.
There is a picture of him in the police car grinning at the camera. And the police look stone cold serious. And there's that one of those fucking Deadpools in the rear view mirror dangling. Mm-hmm. And she put this on Facebook. And she's like the most like cutest little girl you'll ever meet in your life. And she's just like, oh, isn't that cute? Huh? Isn't that funny? I'm like, Jesus Christ, do you know what you know what you have done? This picture is gonna be in history books someday. And you got your Deadpool hanging there. And wow. She's just like, oh, that's so awesome. I'm so happy.
Oh my god.
But yeah.
I want to just say about Kraft, not so much the character, but I think that the boss fights with him, both of them, is one of my favorite boss fights like ever in any 2D platform game like this. I think it's the pinnacle of the whole series. He's got like so many goddamn moves and he throws them. It's so, cool. It's very challenging. But I'm very fond of it. I don't mean that in the kind of sort of gatekeepy sense, but it's just so much fun learning that fight.
Yeah. The one where he fires the laser and it like propels him across the stage.
Oh god,
that
yeah.
Weird arc to it, and then learning that and learning how to interrupt it feels so good.
I love it when he just locks onto you and then fires, and you have to get like the you've got to dash at just the right second so that you pass under the laser. And it's like, when else? I mean, you do that right at the beginning of the game with the first laser thing, which is probably kind of subtly teaching you that, but is that ever used in any of the other Mega Man Zero games? The fact that you slightly descend when you're dashing, like to any, like, because that's the only way you can dodge that shit, apart from maybe a double jump if you have
I see what you mean. I think you might be right now to think about
which
it.
Which is like crazy levels of, look, we've done four of these games now, just learn how to play them, okay? Like, we just, you gotta learn this shit. And I'm kind of here for it. Like, it makes it feel so final, you know?
Absolutely.
I feel like that move might have been in one of the previous ones, but not like in a, you know, this is how you do it kind of way, but just like...
It's not hopping to mind. There probably is, but it's not hopping to mind. It's just because it's so all or nothing. It's like, this is all you can do is learn the timing and dash just at the right timing. It's very, very fun and very, very cool.
There's actually a line that I love in the game that is complete cheese, but that's why I love it. And that is when it becomes clear that Kraft is... You know, I believe in you, Nej, therefore I'm going to kill Wile and therefore a lot of other humans. And he's kind of explaining his plan to Wile, saying, you know, I'm not your dog to yank you around by your chain anymore, which is a pretty cool line to begin with. But then, like, Wile's just like, seduced by the sweet words of a woman. And I'm like, yeah, that's the shit we came here for.
You know, something about Kraft kind of gives me Colonel vibes, but...
Very Colonel, very Barrel, I'd say, from Battle Network.
I was going to mention him, too, but yeah.
He has a cool design. I just like how blocky he is. He looks very Legends-y, in a way.
Yeah, he's got Teasel Bun's exact hair as well.
Exactly, yeah. He's also, Victor, we have talked about this in the past, you cannot go wrong with a robot wearing a cloak.
Robot in a cloak!
And this guy wears his cloak the whole time, and then when he takes it off, it's like, holy shit, he's built... And you're going to die?
Yeah,
he's a pretty cool design. Like, he's one of the reasons I like Zero Four. He kind of has that quiet way about him that's kind of like the crazy kid in the classroom who does the unspeakable.
Yeah. I feel like...
Jesus.
Jesus.
Sorry, what you just said just...
Boy.
Yeah, sorry, that took a second for everyone to register. I'm like, did I go too far? The answer is yes, but...
The crazy kid in the class who drops a colony and then hijacks the colony. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
I think it speaks to the strength of his design that, and Maeda's character designs, that Kraft can be like, he can be so bright and green and purple and still look like he was built to be a military.
Yes.
Like this is a guy who's supposed to go commit war crimes on behalf of a government. Like, yeah.
Yeah. To that point, I was actually checking something earlier, and yeah, his dialogue was also interesting too, because he would like keep stopping himself from talking about them serving Neo Arcadia and changing it to Lord Weil.
Right. Right. Because Weil is taking over Neo Arcadia. Yeah. I remember that now. I know what you're talking about. That is an interesting aside right there. Interesting asides. So Zero dies in this game. Like, he straight up dies. He actually has a really cool and last line that Stuart, if you want to mention, because you actually opened the episode.
It's like, I never cared about justice, and I don't remember calling myself a hero. Something like, I only ever fought for what I believe in. If an enemy, what is it? It's like, if an enemy
appears before me, yeah, I'll destroy it.
Yeah. And then the coolest music you've ever heard starts playing, including the whole choral kind of, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, Dr. Weil grows this massive kind of horn sort of dick thing that you got to grab onto the end of. And, it's perfect. The music is so good. When I talk about it, I get little hairs on the back of my neck. It's that good. That's how good it's like.
It is a really cool.
It's as good as the Final Hazard from Sonic Adventure 2, and that's really good.
Yeah.
I admit that Final Hazard's pretty fucking cool.
That's a big lizard with a space colony, let's not mince words, rammed up its butt.
No wonder's pissed off.
Yeah.
I mean, look, the Dr. Robotnik nose and eyes on Colony Arc are already right there. I mean, if you want me to care about a final boss, put it on something that's falling into the atmosphere.
Oh God, you are timed as well. You've got like 70 seconds or something. I forgot about that. Just
with the planet rise in the background, slowly appearing on screen, and the fire and the debris breaking off of it.
Like the hoses flying up, like it's bad. I mean, it's going to be bad. Like
between the craft fight and the first Weil fight, where he's summoning the bosses from Mega Man Zero 3 to attack you with their EX attacks, it all just really does come together to just film like, no, this is the climax. None of that happened before counted. This is it. Like, there's no more after this. We are throwing everything we got at you. And it's just so good. It's so good.
Yeah.
You know, mentioned Eggman before, and I imagine, like, you know, even he and Wily together would be just like, wow, can you believe this guy and talk about extra?
It does remind me of like the finale of Sonic 3 and Knuckles. Sorry to bring up Sonic 3 and Knuckles on an unrelated podcast, because I've talked about that one a lot, but you know, that whole ending of just like, no, first this boss, now this boss, okay, now he's running away from you, you're going flying through space trying to knock this guy out. Like, it really does feel just like what you said, Nadia, the whole kind of, I don't give a shit about any of this or any of you. You're all going to die. You can all burn with me. I don't care. And you really get that sense of, it's perfect.
Doomsday Zone?
Yeah, the Doomsday Zone. Exactly. Yeah, although Sonic is, of course, fine. Zero does not have a little fox in a biplane to rescue him. You know, unfortunately, I wish we did. Cubit Fox Star comes out in a little biplane and sticks him up. That would be neat, but no.
No, sadly, Zero does not survive. As far as we know, he does not survive the descent into the atmosphere.
He turns into a biometal, maybe, kind of.
He turns into a smashed tin can.
So, do you remember the discourse that I'm pretty sure has subsided now that we have high-resolution version of the end title screen?
Yes.
Because the way the game ends with, you see Zero's broken helmet lying in the sand and the rubble, and there's the sun shining on it, casting long shadows, and the glare from the sun it in the low resolution Game Boy Advance screen, it does look like some of the debris could be a figure standing that is just backlit.
I mean that's gotta be their hedging their bets to some extent. Like, I mean, we know now that it's not, but they could easily have said it was.
Yeah.
they could have if they really wanted to, but just seeing the source of that illustration in its normal resolution, it's clearly not.
It kind of reminds me of the face on the moon. Which,
yeah. Face on Mars stuff
that's right, Mars.
Here's the thing, though. No, they did not want to leave an out. They did not want to make a 0-5. They've said, we killed 0 because we're done. We are done with this. Like, we don't want to do Mega Man 0-5. This is ending the series. So when people start like spotting phantom zeros, like in the background or whatever, you just know they were probably cussing.
Yeah. We tried to make
it.
This was supposed to be as unambiguous as humanly possible. Please stop.
Yeah.
What's funny there, though, is, and like there's some speculation, and I kind of wish it had panned out, because when you do get to Mega Man ZX, you've got this guy who does take up Model Z that's like got Zero's essence in it,
who
looks a lot like Zero, and his name is like Zero. The idea that, like, you know, oh, maybe Zero just decided to lay low for a few hundred years, and like now he's like, you know, running a UPS or something out of
Alucard in Dawn of Sorrow or Area of Sorrow, where he's out Ricardo. He's a businessman,
and it just—I don't know. I still think it would have been great, especially for as like long as he was like, you know, in the whole thing anyway. If Zero had been Zero doing that whole thing, like,
I agree. They should have kept him in there longer.
Well, yeah, then he'd still be dead. So yes. It wouldn't matter.
I'm kind of mad they killed him off. He was really cool. But anyway, Zero in this iteration, yes, certainly dead. His helmet is there on the ground, all cracked and broken.
And we all know there's nothing underneath the helmet, so that has to be that.
Yeah. And
I just wanted to add one other thing. Zero, like, you know, of course, doesn't have the helmet, like not even like when he's mega merged. So that was kind of further fuel for that early on. But again, now he's turned out to be a whole other guy. So
yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So yeah, broken helmet, kind of a sad ending for the game where Seal clearly knows that Zero is probably not coming back. So she runs off to the hillside and has a good cry to the tune of a J-pop song by her voice actress, Unless You Are in North America. Did they restore that for the collection?
No, I don't think so.
I thought they did on the DS one.
No. Maybe on the DS one. I know not Legacy Collection. I don't think it.
Yeah, because there are vocals, but we don't get them in the English version of the game, unfortunately. The song is called Freesia. And yeah, Shale just kind of cries there for a little while as the wind goes through the trees. And it's actually, I think that the credits are all in kanji. It's kind of unusual.
Okay, according to Mega Man Knowledge Base, they say, unlike the North American GBA version, the Mega Man Zero Collection uses the Japanese vocal ending for the game.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, charming.
Oh, great.
Okay. But either way, you know, she gets over her cry and she stands up and says, like, you know, I believe in you, Zero. I know you'll come back to us someday. He never does.
I'll make you come back.
Nope.
I'll make you come back as a rock.
Now, here's my question. I referenced it on the notes. Did any of you read the Wild Incident Eden Dome It's Sin and Rebirth supplementary story thing that came with the soundtrack for...
I think I did long ago.
I have at some
point. Yeah, it's possible I did a long time ago before I gave up reading.
It's really interesting, actually. It's set up in the manner of kind of a newspaper story written by someone who's visiting Area Zero 2 years after the fall and kind of going over what has happened since. And yeah, it looks like Reploids and humans are living in harmony finally. There's actually even an illustration where they're putting up a windmill together and they're all just kind of mingling, and mentions that there's a baby boom apparently, and humans just they're fine. they get along. They're good. They're good until ZX. Good for them. Thanks, Zero, for your sacrifice. But I actually do recommend reading it. It's just the manner of writing is really interesting.
Was it Nej? No, it was a reporter. Nej is a reporter.
It actually mentions her in the report. She gives the reporter a picture of herself in Kraft. And it's just like a picture of her sitting in Kraft's lap. And Kraft is very big behind her. It's kind of sweet, actually.
Yeah, sweet.
That is what sweet. She said.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that is 04. It's just like it's an unusual Zero game, but I think given how much conversation we've had about it, it's also an extremely interesting one. It's different. It has my favorite story of all the Zero games. Yes, David.
Oh, I just wanted to ask. I remember Victor was talking about coming back to the weather system thing later.
Yes.
Was there anything you wanted to add on that?
I was going to say, if you guys have anything else to add at this point, now is the time to like just kind of give me your straight thoughts.
When we talk about the series difficulty, and like I think 03 nails it better. Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned, you have it. It's something that they got better with as the series went on. But even the fact that you're just not meant to do well on the first time you beat a stage. What happens is they add more save slots to the games as they go on, because what they actually want you to do is make a save slot where you just learn the stage and then you load up a save where you then execute completing that stage really, really efficiently and really, really well. Because the levels, the way the scoring system works is, if you want a high score, you have to kill lots of enemies, you have to get through very quickly, you have to not get hit very much, and the scoring system is pretty strict. If you want an S rank, you have to get 96 to 100. A ranks are like 80-something to 90-something, B ranks. So in 03, the way you get EX skills from the bosses is you have to finish their stage with an A rank or higher.
Right.
So what you would do is you'd make a save file for that level, get really, really good at it. It wasn't about blazing through the game linearly. It was about breaking it up into chunks that you get good at and execute really, really well. Because there is like 4 has like a crafting system and materials to farm and the E crystals that you upgrade your cyber elf with, which was also totally revamped for 4.
Yeah, there's only one.
They're leaning towards it with 3 with the satellite elves that are free to use. But then in this one, it's more like you can put your points in almost like you're gradually leveling up just the one elf, right? And you gain more and more abilities the more you feed it. You can use it for free, which is nice. You know, it's friendly of them.
Yeah. Unlike the first 2 games or 3 games even, like where you were like actively punished for using like cyber elves, I think this was a little more friendly for it.
This is a lot more lenient, gives you room for experimentation. But the materials that you want to farm take time. So you want to be going back into stages after you've cleared them for the first time and gotten your S rank to go get these materials. Otherwise, you're harming the bottom line of your score and risking losing your A or S ranks or whatever. So I think 3 really nails that balance really, really well.
Right.
4, it's not about whether it makes it too easy. It's about whether it incentivizes you to get good, to get better than you even need to be with extra rewards like the EX skills. Because the way they give the EX skills is beating the bosses with their beneficial weather. Now, I don't love that the weather change system is just a toggle. It's just either you're in good weather or you're in bad weather. Why do we as Zero have control over this entire region?
Because we're friends with Jesus. We talked about this.
but there's no reason why that should work.
No.
What? Sure. What I wish
one of the resistance members hacked into the weather system from Eurasia.
Yes, Hirondel tells you that, hey, we've got access to this region's weather. Don't worry, we can manipulate it however we want. Which seems like something that that you would not like. A while would certainly he's got all his weather based minions at his beck and call. You'd think he would stop you from controlling the weather.
Yeah, there is that.
Yeah, he's about to send somebody down to assassinate whoever's in there, and then he's like, wait a minute, why is he making the stage harder?
Yeah.
Okay. Let him do it. This is weird. I want to see.
Cancel. Yeah. Abort the operation. Let him cook.
But
so to speak.
Literally on Salt Titanian's stage.
Yeah. With all of the references to X5. What I wish this game did, and I try not to do this, I try not to speculate on what I wish a game was that it isn't, but when you're invoking X5 like this with Eurasia, why not give it a timeline that where you are then you're monitoring the weather in the stages and you're trying to decide, okay, do I want to go to this stage while the weather is optimal, or do I want to try to finish this one in this sort of time limit that is given to me?
It's sort of like, in a way, it's sort of like the nightmare effects from X6.
I was going to say,
I've been waiting the entire episode to bring that up.
Sorry.
I just wanted to say on that point, it's very much like the nightmares, but I think I kind of prefer not having to I want to go fight Rainy Turtloid. Oh, but I can't because stupid effects in the stage.
It actually kind of reminds me more of in X2 when you have the X-Hunters going into each stage and you have one chance to get that hunter, and if you complete the stage or leave the stage, it's gone.
I think I agree. I mean, I'm going to be weird about X5 just a minute, okay? I think X5 is one of the great nihilist games. The fact that you can do everything right and still fail is come on. Yes, art. Finally.
Yeah.
Finally, games are art. Make a side Uncharted, But
totally.
I do think it would be cool if Zero 4 did lean into that kind of not randomization, because I don't want things like the nightmare effects because they do my head in.
Yeah.
But if they did take more of a leaf out of X5 and the sense of you're not fully in control of this situation, because it does seem a little toothless that you can just choose what you do when, more or less.
And if Hirondel was giving you a weather forecast or something, and it was which beneficial weather do I want to do now, or do I want to use this opportunity to get an EX skill from a boss that will help me do something later? There's a schedule management thing and a time management thing that I think would have worked and lent itself well to the sort of apocalyptic scenario plus weather being such a factor.
I guess one thing I want to mention, sorry, real quick, I promise. Zero 3 is my favorite one. I do think that the difficulty isn't what it could be, in the sense that getting these high ranks, if you want that challenge, you also are playing the objective, and some of the objectives in those levels are a pain in the ass, even if you know what you're doing, like burning every single shred of vegetation, or that stage where you have to memorize the colors of the doors and go in the right door, and it's always the same. And I'm kind of glad they took that stuff out from 4 just to make it a more straightforward action game. I don't think there are any real puzzle aspects here apart from the occasional get the key card, get the sub tank, search the levels, find, what is it called, Ceritanium, the rare metal that you can craft with.
Yeah.
I do think it was a nice idea to give the player almost kind of a victory lap by this point. Like, look, just take the stuff. Like, it's fine. You know, you don't want to have to unlock Jackson mode and use every single goddamn cyber elf. Like, nobody wants to do that. So that's gone. I feel like they streamlined it. Maybe there's a fair argument that they streamlined it too much, but I think it paid off for telling the story they wanted to tell.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
0-3 really hit the difficulty sweet spot for me. Yeah. Like, it felt like the best kind of difficulty from the X games to me. To what Victor was saying earlier, though, I don't remember using the multiple save points often. Like, after the initial completion of it, when I was, like, trying to perfect it, basically what I would do is, like, you know, I'd play, and, like, if I got hit or just anything that went wrong, I'd reset and, like, start over, like, reload the save file, and just basically kind of do that over and over and over.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And regarding the comparison between the Nightmare system and 0-4, I will say that, like, you know, being able to choose probably would have benefited X6 more, because there you've got the, like, you know, boss cycle weaknesses. I don't remember if that was, like, really such a thing in 0-4, was it?
Yeah, I mean, one thing with 0-4 is did they get rid of the fire, ice, and electric chips in this game? I feel like they did.
Yeah.
Which I think you had to craft them.
Oh, you could still craft them. I know you can get the EX skills that use those kind of things, but it just felt like the focus was even less on the rock, paper, scissors type thing here.
Yeah.
Which means that no matter which order you do them in, it doesn't really matter that much. You're going to have a similar kind of time fighting the bosses. Yeah. So it's a weird balance to me, and I don't know if any Mega Man game in the entire series has ever perfectly managed to nail that. You know, even like X, my favorite, you can just stink a million your way through the second half of the game. So but I feel like in 4 they did capture something of that feeling of empowerment finally in a series where you're usually really up against it. You're really scraping by. In this one, it's like, no, it's okay. Just, you know, feed some E-crystals. You can have a much longer life bar. It's fine. Don't worry about it. You can have the AS ranks. It doesn't. You can have the skills. It's fine.
As a treat.
You fought very hard, okay? The next game's a pain in the ass. Don't worry about it. Just do this one. Have a good time.
Yeah, it was a nice change versus, like, you know, 0-1's, like, you know, eat kittens to, like, you know, get perks, kind of, like, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I can never get behind that kind of thing.
I love all these games. It's just, it is a kind of a interesting thing where they've made probably ultimately the most simultaneously uplifting, painful, but also easy kind of. I mean, some of the bosses are really hard, but you have much more opportunity to turn the tables. It's exactly. It works. I could go on forever, but I mustn't.
Right. Any final thoughts on 0-4? It looks like the consensus is it's a good game, great in many ways, but maybe 0-3 is better in other ways.
Yeah.
Great game.
I think it's that frictionlessness that stops it being my absolute favorite, despite the fact that it's what makes it more playable. It's a weird one. But I do love it. I like, great game. I'd play it again in a second. Great fun.
And 0-3 lets you decorate the home base.
It
Come on.
Does.
Come on. What are we doing?
It does. And I have to say, and you can put cats, many cats in that base. I am kind of pissed off, though, that the chip or the card that you're supposed to get for Andrew to turn back into a handsome Reploid, he turns into a regular NPC. Like, ooh, that's crap.
Here's where we got ripped off, though, is because, like, you did all that stuff with e-reader cards, but we didn't get those e-reader cards here, and I don't think those options were, like, legitimately available to us until either the DS collection or the Legacy collection.
I think it was in both of them.
They're in the DS one, You, I think you beat the easy scenario for each game, and you unlock the cards for as it goes along.
Which is cool. I get, like, plants and very just, cool. It's fun. You're right, Victor.
Yeah.
Decorating your base is a very important part of 0-3, and it sucks they took it out.
Yeah, you can change Zero's color. There's fun. That's fun. 0-3 is having fun.
It's having fun. It's having a good time.
You can also cross it over with Battle Network 4, I believe, to get a Z-Saber in that game and bring viruses from Battle Network into the cyberspace
area. That's so great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just, hey, kids, bring viruses into a world without viruses. It'll go great. Immunity. Learn it real fast. That is it for this nature-destroying episode of Retronauts. Huge thank you to my guests. Who wants to promote stuff? Why don't we start with you, Stuart?
Axe of the Blood God, but no, I'm kidding. I wrote a book called All Games Are Good. You can get it through Limited Run Games. It's about how all games are good, and I wrote it. And you can hear me on Retronauts fairly frequently, possibly too frequently, some may say.
Some are wrong. How about you, Victor?
Oh, of course. Well, Nadia and I are co-hosts over at sort of Retronauts' sister podcast, all about RPGs, Axe of the Blood God. We got our weekly episodes, and we've released a bunch of stuff over the holidays that are really great listens. Our most anticipated RPGs of 2026 episode just came out. We got a bunch of fun stuff planned for the future, so head on over there. Our Discord is also a real treat.
We have a great Discord.
There's a lot of crossover in the Retronauts and the Blood God community. But yeah,
sure,
that's pretty much it. Also, I'm an actor. Hire me. Oh my gosh. Please hire me.
Hire Victor. Good He's Lord. Very good. And he has lots of experience.
I have quite a bit of experience.
And David, how about you?
Well, for the, I guess, relevant stuff, I run the mmnetwork.com, which is the Mega Man Network, and the MM Network on socials. So you can find me talking about or sharing Mega Man stuff there. We mentioned earlier this Wednesday at all better comic shops near you, or at least the ones handling lunar distribution. Mega Man ZX Timelines number 1, which I did not write, and Mega Man Legends Timelines number 1, which I did write. Those are both going on sale this week. And also, Nadia and I, we do streams on the Nightworks, that's NYTEWORKS, Twitch channel. Usually every other weekend, we usually alternate between Nadia and David Ruin Video Games, where we play, you know, whatever tickles our fancy at the time, and Nadia and David's Mega Man Mayhem, where we we're basically playing Mega Man games, trying to adhere roughly to the chronological order, like the story timeline. We're starting Mega Man 9 next time, and once we finish Classic, we'll go on to X, and after that we'll go on to Zero, and so on.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I swear a lot. I try not to swear when we're playing the Mega Man stuff because I try to keep it PG, but sometimes I slip and then he gets mad at me. But anyway, if you like Retronauts, please support us over at patreon.com/retronauts. At $5 a month, you get episodes a week early and ad free, in addition to Discord access. You also get bonus articles and exclusive podcasts. But if you really want to blow your kids' inheritance money, you can subscribe to the new $100 a month level for all that cool stuff, plus the chance to be a guest on Retronauts for every 4 months that you are subscribed at the $100 level. Wow, that means you can tell us to dedicate an episode to calling ourselves stupid morons and we have to listen to you. It'd be the law. But until you can actually afford us, so long, Zero. We'll see you again. You've been resurrected as a piece of scrap metal that gives children superpowers.